Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be covering a topic that, for those of you that might be conspiracy theorists, it's absolutely going to fit your paradigms just wonderfully. But as a citizen of these United States, it has often been a concern to me that so many things are covered up. And in today's world, with our refined technology, communication is happening at a phenomenal rate. And we're often able to get information and details about things around the world that would have taken not all that long ago, maybe weeks to get. So my guest today, Bill Dean, is a man who has a fascinating background and has put out a book called Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave. Now, what we're going to be sharing with you today may surprise you, and you may say to yourself, well, I would not be surprised at this at all. I'm a little bit disgusted with it, but I'm not surprised. So without further delay, I want to welcome Bill Dean, who is in New York. Bill, welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure to be with you. I've been looking forward to this.
Well, so have I, Bill. When I got your book, when I found out about it, and then I started reading it and going through it, I remember my just sort of going to myself and shaking my head and saying, wow, it takes somebody with a lot of guts to be able to come out with this kind of information. Now, I want my audience to know about you and your background. You are a journalist. This has been your passion. You've been very dedicated to a profession that has changed its colors quite a bit through the years. You feel that part of your job as a journalist is finding out the truth, and you feel like it's your job to let the public know about what you find out about. You've been a journalist for over 33 years. You also have written quite a bit. You were a news assignment editor at ABC and CBS, a news director in Denver and in Rochester, New York. You've been an anchor at stations. You are just deeply involved with media on so many different levels. You've won a number of awards, including the Edward R. Murrow Award for the best coverage of a major news-breaking event. And all of this really is something, I think, that when you gain more experience and you live in a world that has so much deception and cover-up, and you have seen in your lifetime so many various experiences. This book, Smooth Criminal, and this is a true story. This is not fabricated. You have right in the front of your book that this book is dedicated to all those known and unknown who have suffered physically, mentally, and financially under the clandestine prisoner release program of the federal government. How is it, Bill, that you became aware of this? What were the events and conversations that motivated you to say, I must tell the public about this?
Well, it came when I was a rock and roll top 40 DJ in Miami. And I was very young, and this guy comes in with a couple of other guys, and they want me to play his record. That's not unusual. And you get it on one of the big stations in a market within the top 20, as Miami was. And, you know, maybe you can sell some records around the country. Maybe it'll be popular. I was told by the music director that it might be a good idea to play the record if it wasn't obnoxious or anything. And so I listened to it, and I didn't think that it was really hit material, but it was an okay record. So I put it on at 11 o'clock one night, and then about a week later I put it on again. This guy would come in, the guy who wanted to be Frank Sinatra, and didn't sound like him at all, came in with his two buddies all the time. And those were the only two times that I played it, because I got an idea that maybe part of the building might be blown up some night if we refused. And, you know, you go to the mob and you get your record produced or whatever, or you ask for a favor, and of course they will then ask you for a favor in return, and you have to do it. Well, he went to this Mafioso record production company in Miami, and he got his record, and then they said, we'd like you to extort a high political official. This is before I met him or anything else. This is before I got to Miami. The problem was that the high political official had lots of connections with the Coral Gables police, which is probably one of the, it certainly is one of the finest suburbs of Miami. And the detectives there were plain clothes, and they had about 20 of them there to pick up Smooth Criminal. That's how he wound up in jail. It was a story that I went back to the Miami Herald on. As I say, this is before my time, but story that I looked up, and it was like on a page 12 or something, and it was just a little tiny article. And they said that it was only $500 extortion, which we later found out it was $5,000, which would be the equivalent of $20,000 today. And that's how he wound up in jail. And this is during the Kennedy administration, and actually touching on the Eisenhower. They, of course, wanted to get rid of Castro, and Kennedy picked up on it. And this guy is in jail, and he is being talked to, and as you're in jail, you know, you do tests and everything. And then eventually they asked him, how'd you like to get out of jail? And, of course, anybody would say, yeah, sure, I want to get out of jail. And they said, we think that you're the type that could do dangerous assignments overseas for us. And so they taught him. He was brilliant. He had dyslexia. He could hardly write, but he was brilliant. And he could memorize, and he made up for what we write in pen and pencil. He could memorize very easily. He turned himself into a Cuban in 2 months. He could speak Spanish dialect Cuban. And he started making these runs over to Cuba. Now, in those days, we didn't have satellite equipment that you can look down and you can see somebody walking into a house or not, you know, and you can watch them all day long on those satellites. The satellites were up there, but they weren't that good. And they had U-2 planes that had to fly over at 9,000 miles up and catch as much as they could. So they needed people on the ground to do things. And he became one of those, and the other two guys that were hanging out were that, too. I had no idea when they came to my station at WFUN that they were out of jail and they were supposed to be in jail. I had no idea that they were walking freely, and the feds had that much control over the warden. Hey, we're taking him out, and the warden would salute, and that's the way it went. The feds, the CIA, and the ATF, and so forth, have that kind of a power over the prisons of America.
Bill,
he was a perfect type.
I just want to stop you for a minute here, because this to me is extremely significant. Here in the state of Washington, we have constant battles going on because of people who are felons, they have such criminal behavior that it's just appalling. And the idea that these clandestine operations are going on, and I've met enough people through the years where this is not conspiracy theory. This is something that really goes on. And anybody with 5 cents worth of awareness is going to be able to recognize that. Stepping back into World War II, the Mafia was actively engaged in World War II on
they
so many
were.
Levels. They were very, very active in World War II activities. And some of it had an economic base because they didn't want to be taken over by the Germans. And there's a whole aspect there that if anybody wanted to research it, it is very real. When we're talking about this time frame, we're talking about a man. His name is David Thomas Riley. And he
the real
was,
name, we can use the real name on the air.
Okay.
It's, I have to change the name in the book.
In the book, okay.
Because books hang around for 30 years, and so we've changed the names in the book, but this can be considered a news story, what we're doing now. It's David Thomas Healy, and anyone can look it up and see that it went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States.
Mm-hmm. And that is what I think is so amazing with what you've been able to put together as a journalist. You're not making just flippant statements here. You have got accurate information, and that is something that I think is causing a level of accountability. And this isn't the only man, but this is a man that you actually have active documentation about. And he was a phenomenal con. He was absolutely first class as a con. And he began at a very, very young age with this. Like you said, he was brilliant. The fact that people are tested in prisons, and those that are the most brilliant, that they feel that they can manipulate and use and then train, just as you said, it really is something, it makes us aware of a whole different world. And most of us go to sleep at night and don't even have any concept that it's operating in what I call the darker areas of life. And this is something that police officers sometimes have to contend with. If they are honest, if journalistic reporters, you have to contend with this. This is something that is not to be taken lightly, and you really have to think and really get your stuff together. But this guy was just incredible, and his career span for getting away with murder and getting away with robbery, getting away with abusing the lives of other people and destroying other people, and he could still be alive today. Is he still alive?
The last time I was able to trace him, he was in New York on West 76th Street off of Central Park in 2005, and I haven't been able to find him since. So I assume that he's in witness protection. And when you're in witness protection, I guess everybody knows that you can't even talk to your family. You just have to disappear. And the one of the principal victims of David Healy was a woman who was shopping just a year ago and got into her car at the shopping center, and she swears he came right up to the car, right up to the window on the other side. The window was closed because of air conditioning, and she was within 3-4 inches of his face. He put his face right up against it, and she was so nervous that when she had started the car, she rammed the car in front of him, and at that point, the man took off, and she swears that it was he. And that makes sense, because if he was caught being discovered finding somebody in his past, he would be taken out of witness protection, which he probably has to be, because there may be people after him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that there are, because he was just appalling. Let's talk for a moment about the fact, you mentioned the witness protection program. I don't think most people are aware that the movie Good Guys was really based on fact. And I knew a detective that worked, and I don't remember the guy's name, but he was part of the Mafia. And they protected this sleazeball. That's what I'll call him. I mean, he was just a hideous, hideous person. And he was under the witness protection program because they wanted the information that he was able to secure. Now, that's one of the things that David Thomas Healy did. They used him at one point in his career to find and to secure other criminals. But before we get into that, because this is just such a complex story, let's talk about this lady who for 20 years, she's in her 90s now, if I remember correctly, 91, 92. And
91.
This woman, he came into her life. She was quite successful in her own way. She had her own motel. She had a good business. She had a very good life. And when David Thomas Healy walked into her space, that was to begin a 20-year nightmare that, to this day, you just told about her experience a year ago. She's terrified this man is going to come back in. Tell us her story. What happened with her?
Well, she was a motel owner. She had a business in New Jersey and had four properties up here. And she bought a motel, a very nice motel. It had 40 rooms on top and 40 on the bottom, 80. And it was on Biscayne Boulevard in Miami, which is like a main drag. It's the old U.S. 1. If you want to come into Miami or go out of Miami, you go on U.S. 1. And this was up on 86th Street or 83rd Street. And she had this nice motel business and a very nice, I'm not talking about, you know, the Hilton, but it was a clean place with a nice pool and so forth. And one customer came in one day, and that was David, and with one of his women. He had about 20 or 25% of the women just fell for him. And he didn't have to have a home. He could go to one girl's house for a couple of days and then pack up and go some other place. And all the women were accommodating. They understood he had to go over and see another woman. And that was totally, they were totally in his control. And he came in with his girlfriend and wanted a room. And she gave it to him. And little did she know that was the change that would change her life. What con artists do is they try to find a rapport with you. And here she was. Her father was an immigrant from Poland who worked and studied at the kitchen table and learned perfect English, she tells me, on his own over about a three-year period. And worked very hard, had a business, and so she believed in the American way, as he, her father, did. And immediately Healy saw all these American flags around the office, and he started to relate, and he says, oh, yeah, you know, I'm patriotic, too. And he created the story that he had direct connections to the White House and President Kennedy. Oh, well, this is later, I'm sorry. This would be President Jimmy Carter. And this is when the nightmare began. And, of course, she was doubtful that that was true. But the FBI was there. I asked her recently, I said, how many times? She says, all the time. So that gave credence to his story that he had this direct connection to the President of the United States. She didn't hear the conversations. The FBI was with him. But the reason they were there was they were telling him that he was going to go back to jail if he didn't inform. And one time he informed one of his, he was running a heroin operation, and he told them, he says, well, you can probably on I-95, which I guess everybody knows is one of the big interstates going north and south. He says, well, you can look on I-95, and he's looking at his watch, and he says, yeah, probably in about 35 minutes, this car, and he gave the right description, will be crossing into North Carolina. And you can probably get him, he says, but be careful. He's got a lot of weapon there and a lot of illegal cigarettes, too. So they had a real shootout. So the feds were there, maybe with 10 guys and with automatics, and he was killed. This was one of Healy's workers. He would gladly turn other people in. He turned 15 people in one time who were doing two-bit crimes with the American Express company. And then as they got out after a month or two, he threw a great big party for them with a band and champagne and everything. Little did they know that he was the one that put them in jail in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Now, he's really a piece of work. Now, I want to point out some information that I think is quite significant. Prestigious colleges. You say smart, patriotic Americans from prestigious colleges and universities make an attractive match for employment with the central intelligence agencies. And they want to get operatives that are willing to risk their lives for freedom. And they will look for certain personality traits within the jail population. And one of the traits, not only was he brilliant, David Thomas Healy, but he also had a very strong patriotic streak. Now, this came out through the testing that they did. And even though he would be listed as the creep of creeps, I mean, he had no conscience and when it came to doing anything. If someone had to be murdered, okay, we'll blow you away. No big deal. Whatever it took was fine with him. And he had no sides, really. But he did have this patriotic streak, which sounds almost ridiculous when I'm saying it. But that made him what they considered prime working material to do the dirty work so that other people wouldn't have to do it. If he was caught or murdered, he's expendable, no big deal. What's the deal? He's creeping crud.
That's
so
right.
If he's killed, that's great. And that's what happened when he went over. He and his two buddies were in Cuba, and they were captured. What's the name of that prison?
That's something the CIA did not count on.
Mm-hmm.
And,
what's the name of the prison there in Cuba?
I can't wait till Castro reads the book, because I think he played a trick on them, because they had guys like Healy all over that island and doing different things I said, why should they trust you? You know, you're a crook. I told him that when I talked to him. He says, because we really don't know what we're doing. He says, I'm told to go to such and such a corner and count the number of generals leaving and coming and going between 2 and 3 in the afternoon. Now, somebody else might be doing that too. And if you better come back with the same figures, or you'll go right back into a regular jail cell. So that's how the feds knew whether they were doing their job or not. Now, so I have an idea that I'm positive that Castro knew that this was going on, and these little airplanes were flying like Cessnas and Pipers over there, getting information and then flying back. One thing that they never thought of, they knew that these guys might be caught, might be shot, might be thrown in jail. They had no idea that they would be sent back, because Castro had never let any hijackers come back to the United States. Nobody ever came back after a hijacking, and they didn't kill that many of them, but if they thought that you were a spy, they sure would.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these guys, the pilot chickened out, and he says, I didn't want to come. Please let me go back to the United States. Well, they were tortured for 8 days, and then they were put on a Pan Am flight. Pan Am was still operating then, and they were flown back to Miami. The three of them were on that flight, and when the plane got to Miami International Airport, the pilot, who had squealed, disappeared. We don't know mm-hmm. what happened to him. And then a new pilot comes in and says, yes, I was the pilot. Now, the CIA won't hold a news conference. It was the FBI that held it for them. But there's a new pilot that comes in. And when I met Healy later, I said, whatever happened? He says, I don't know. He disappeared, the pilot that they knew, the guy that went over to the radio station with the two other guys.
Mm-hmm.
He just disappeared. And they had a new guy who testified over three years. One point here that I think is important. This, they had to hold a trial. They had to come up with an excuse. They couldn't, the FBI, the CIA, had to come up with an excuse why this was going on. They couldn't say, yes, we are involved in sending these spies over to Cuba. They couldn't do that. Russia would walk all over the CIA if they did that. So they invented the story that it was a kidnapping and that these guys, who truly were patriotic, had wanted to defect to Cuba.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
very.
They held a trial, and the judge was in on it, and he kept dismissing it for silly things, for silly reasons, like the plane was too small to be called a transport plane, and the Air Piracy Act says that it must be a transport plane, and because it's a Cessna, it's too small, case dismissed. He came up with excuses like that. Finally, the United States Supreme Court, unaware of the ruse, said, "We're sorry, Judge Choate, you have to hold a real trial." Well, they held a real trial, 12-person jury, international kidnapping, could mean death, and he apologized. He gave him 20 years. He said, "That's the minimum. I can't give any less. I'm sorry." But there was a little clause in it that they didn't know. The little clause was, "Unless excused earlier by the warden." Well, they were walking that day out of court. They didn't even have to go to the jail that day. No 20 years for them.
This is something that so many times when there is media coverage, which obviously there was some of this, when you have things like this going on, then you only get a smidgen of what's really going on behind the scenes. And that's what your book, Smooth Criminal, brings out, all of many of the workings, not all, but many of the workings that are going on behind the scenes. And here we are years later, and this man still is free. He is still out there somewhere. And
somewhere,
affecting other people's lives in who knows what manner, because he's a pathological liar. And you go into quite a bit of the history of what he's gotten, but I wanted to talk about, And I know we're coming to the bottom of the hour. Would you be able to stay with me for about another 15 minutes?
Certainly.
All right, wonderful, because I know we're going to be coming up on a break pretty soon. So what I wanted to do is see if you'd stay with me, because what I wanted to discuss is this lovely woman, very, very sweet, thoughtful,
yes,
hardworking.
You can incidentally
individual.
Talk to her. I have her number, of course. I've talked to her many, many times. If you'd ever like to do an interview with her, you're welcome to. She wants this story out desperately.
No kidding.
Yes.
Because she was such a phenomenal victim, and her whole family was affected by this guy. And how they finally managed to get out of it and get away from it. Gee whiz, it was 20
years. Yeah, she was drugged and signed away four properties, four deeds in New Jersey, and doesn't remember it at all. I'm sorry we're talking only about the East Coast here, but that's all I know. I'm sure it goes on in California, up in Washington, and other places, because this releasing criminals is very, very productive for the federals.
And you go into the Sinatra connection, you talk about all of these different things. This isn't pie-in-the-sky stuff. This is something that many people in the public figured out on their own. They didn't have to go and get a Ph.D. in investigative reporting. They figured it out on their own because they looked at different facts that did come out. So what you're bringing out in this book, Smooth Criminal, is a lot of confirmation of what often goes behind the scenes. We're going to be taking
my
a break.
My profession hasn't, I'm kind of ashamed of it, because they run from one news conference to another, and they think by getting the other side of the story, they've covered it. But, and this is a perfect example of, and the press, I believe, was better in those days in the 1960s and 70s than it is now, because it's just running from one news conference to another. And now organizations that own broadcast and television stations and so forth are connected to companies that make war equipment and so forth, and the reporters know what to cover and what not to cover. Like here in New York, General Electric had polluted the Hudson River terribly over 100 years, I guess. And this is something that when you are a reporter for NBC, you know you don't cover the pollution in the Hudson River, or you lose your job. Nobody will tell you that, but you have to figure that out.
Well, Bill, and we're taking a break.
It's too bad.
Yes, it is. Bill, we're taking a break for just a moment. When we come back, I want to talk about Joanne and a little bit of what she went through and some other points of information. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Bill Dean is going to stay with us for some more time frame. I told you, you're going to be hearing some interesting things, so don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Welcome back. My guest today is Bill Dean, if you're just tuning in. And also, we're talking about his very factual book called Smooth Criminal. Now, this is about a man, David Thomas Healy. That's his real name. He has had a criminal history. Bill believes that he's under the Witness Protection Program. He showed up, giving his appearance to a woman that he had literally terrorized and her family, destroying them for 20 years. And we're going to be talking about Joanne, but there are a couple of points that I want to bring out. And that is, and this is right in your book, Bill, and you have all the documentation behind it, and that is the fact that the CIA became a drug dealer. And there's still so much of this that's going on. And I remember when I first learned about the fact that it was the CIA that was able to get involved in the drug business and that helped to fund a lot of the war actions and supply of munitions to different people. I mean, this stuff really is hideous. And we've got something going on right now, an investigation about weapons that got into Mexico, and we're not going to go into that. But these are things that occur, and to bring it out into the light of day is often extremely difficult because of the people that are associated with it that go all the way to the top. So investigative reporting is a very precarious profession, to be perfectly frank. But you talk about the Golden Triangle, and you talk about how the Laotian Army commander opened a heroin laboratory to supply drugs to U.S. troops in Vietnam. The CIA didn't do anything about it. And 34% of U.S. troops stationed in Vietnam were addicted to heroin. And I know that this, I think it's higher than that, but I know about this because of young men that crossed my path and told me about the flow of drugs and to escape the misery of their environment, the bugs, the different diseases they could get, and war. It just flowed like water. And the people in the States had no clue unless they had people that told them this story. And you go into so much detail, and I know it hasn't been cleaned up. I know for a fact that it's still there. So here we've got this information that goes all the way back into the 60s. You go into the Kennedy stuff, but let's talk about this woman, Joanne. And to me, this woman, she's 91 years old. She lost so much. What was it that kept her so aligned with this man? I mean, she was even drugged by him. It was a member of her family that said the only reason she did some of this stuff is because he was putting stuff in her tea or her coffee. Tell us about this. 20 years to be subjugated to this kind of stuff?
Well, he would come and go, and he wouldn't tell her when he was coming back. But he had total control over her. And he was a con artist extraordinaire. He knew how to play one person against the other, and he would have family, created family problems. And he would be the one, supposedly, that would solve them. And, of course, he went deeper. The problem went deeper when he said, I'll take care of this. I have some letters that are just blistering on her part that he had told her to write to get rid of his her sister, because she was destroying the teamwork that he and she had been developing for the, essentially to save the United States from communism. And that sounds crazy, and you'd say, oh, I wouldn't be fooled by that. But you get into the middle of this, and I'm totally sympathetic toward her, particularly that any time he wanted her to sign something, he became a drug expert. He knew how to mix them. He was with Air America with the CIA over there in Indochina, and he became a drug expert and came back to the United States with what he had learned. Excuse me.
And I think it was her brother that really felt that she was under the influence, because she did not have the normal response patterning. And he said the reason she did the things that she did, it wasn't because this was normal behavior. It was because he was manipulating her and was actually using narcotics. Now, there are people in the intelligence agencies that will tell you that there are chemical combinations. If they want information out of someone, they don't necessarily have to torture them. They just give them something, and they'll get all the information they want. And it's not the truth serum, because that isn't what works. It's some of these other things that affect the brain, where they can induce particular brain patterning that will create a certain response. And so
exactly.
If he was that sophisticated, that's what you're getting. And most of us don't even have a clue about chemistry, on the most part, because that's not our strength. But there are those that do, and he apparently, because he was so brilliant, soaked up this information like crazy and used whatever he could.
He was a very confident talker, too, and that's one thing that a con artist has to be. Got to have charisma and charm, and if you've got the slightest feeling of doubt, he'll find it. When I first met him, I was surprised when he told me, and this told me so much. It was so startling when I first heard it. I knew nothing about what we were talking about today. And he said, you know, I can go into a bar and I can tell a guy, you stupid fool, your wife is cheating on you. And he says, and the guy can beat me up, he says, but I've planted doubt in his head.
Mm-hmm.
And that just shows how he operated.
And he worked on that. And that is something...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, the psychological profile.
I have to say that the reason the CIA was paying people with drugs up there was that was the only way they would fight. It isn't the CIA wanted to do that, but the American dollars mean nothing up in the Golden Triangle. You want a quart of milk, you go and give a certain amount of heroin to the grocery store. And so the only way to get them to fight was to give them drugs.
Amazing.
I think that the rationale, I cannot accept the rationale saying, we're sorry, because we should point out that this woman and everybody went to the police and said, please help. And the police were told by the federal, by the feds, by the CIA, leave him alone, he's ours. In other words, they were told, do not help anybody that's in trouble. And that, to me, is just unconscionable. That, I mean, these people had nowhere to turn. They went to the police. The brother of hers went to the local police in Miami, and before he got back to the motel, the local police had called the smooth criminal and said, hey, you know, the brother was over here. And when the poor brother got back to the motel, he was slammed up against the wall and said, you ever do that and you're a goner. She went to the FBI and said, please help. And they said, go home. He's no con artist, according to her, in those exact words.
You know, this is something that really is, if you want to use the word frightening, when your own law enforcement agencies, because of this, do not help the individual. They say, no, we can't. And this is one of the reasons why I think so many people have become so cynical. And they're becoming even more cynical. Because there's one lie on top of another lie on top of another lie. And then you add more frosting of lies. And you get to the point where you wonder, where is the truth? And then when you find out the truth and it's really brought out, then there's all this denial. And this seems to have been a pattern that's developed. And historically, you look at about every country in the world that's been and is currently, and the same stuff is going on there. I think that for you to write about this and to bring it out where it's in black and white for people to read and realize that your agenda is that people need to know that there are felons, there are these hideous people. Yes, they are brilliant, that are being allowed to leave the confines of a prison to do this kind of work. And like with Joanne, she asks for help, and I say, sorry, he's more valuable to us than you are as a citizen of these United States. And that is really, really something.
You know, I mean, these people on the CIA and so forth are not bad people. They look at it, they say, well, so what if we're hurting a few people? So what if this poor woman is drugged and goes bankrupt? So what if a neighborhood is ravaged by this guy firing his AK-47 in the middle of the night and disturbing people and scaring the hell out of little kids? So what? Because we have 315 million Americans that we have to protect, and this is the way we have to do it. And so but I totally disagree. They don't want to release this program. They don't want to reveal the program that they are secretly releasing prisoners. And so they are so quiet and in such denial. I said to Joanne, as we call her, I said, didn't one of them come up? I mean, she says they were there all the time. And she says, not once. I said, oh, you know, couldn't one of them whispered in the ear without revealing the program or anything, just say, watch out for this guy, don't trust him? That's all she needed. But she was being told all the time, and with the FBI there and the CIA in plain clothes, that this guy was, really, really sitting next to the President of the United States. He was that important. The drugs that were he and talking about how patriotic he was, I really do believe that he was very patriotic. He had drug stores supplying certain drugs for his operation. Oh yes, here's one thing I have to tell you to talk about control, how she was controlled. He says he had two crack houses in downtown Tampa at one time. And he says, we're going to go downtown, and we're going to stand across the street. And he says, in 5 minutes, he says, that wooden building over there is going to catch fire. There's going to be an explosion. And that's how he eliminated his crack house competitors. And can you imagine, I mean, if you went down there and you stood there and here this guy is so powerful he can blow up houses, you would be scared. That's what she was. She was totally scared.
Absolutely.
Afraid.
Absolutely. It's a complete, perfect representation of a real terrorist, not from another country, but one that has been paid millions of dollars, still is probably under a witness protection program, His real name, David Thomas Healy, and I'm sure that those that might still be around that have been victims of his shenanigans, and that's a light word to use, but they are there. And I really think that your book, Bill Dean, Smooth Criminal, A One-Man American Crime Wave, is not just powerful. It's not just about the one man. It's about so many different levels of law enforcement, judicial system, media, lies upon lies upon lies. And I think it's great that you have been willing to put this out there. Now, I know we're out of time here. What is the website that people go to, Bill, if they want to know more about this?
Well, you can get me, and of course, you can get the book, and it's very easy to get the book. It's down today, but it will probably be up tomorrow. You just punch up Our Missing News, and I do news stories. I have one on imported food today. But over on the left, you'll see a picture of the book, and after tomorrow, you'll be able to punch up, and you'll be able to get the book. You can get it in Kindle, and we're going down to $4.99, so everybody will have a chance to get it. If you don't want to pay $4.99, you don't want it.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
And the paperback is on there, too, which is more expensive. Just Our Missing News. And you'll get it, and you'll see the picture of the book, Smooth Criminal, on the left. I could tell you, you can also go directly to Amazon, but actually the way I've told you is easier. And
absolutely.
Also, you can go to a bookstore. It's all over the world. The whole book, can they may not have it, but they can order it for you.
Terrific.
Bill, make sure that you say Smooth Criminal, a one-man American crime wave, because there's a Michael Jackson song and so forth called Smooth Criminal.
Right. Smooth Criminal. A one-man American crime wave. I'll tell you, if you need to open your eyes, this is a book to get. Bill Dean has been my guest. It's been wonderful. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic. Safe for children, too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. Oh, now I don't want to forget, those of you who are in Western Washington listening to the show, I want to let you know I have free family passes to one of the finest events you can ever attend. It's the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. It's 14, 15 years old. It has been just a wonderful event that I've participated in for most of those years. It's held the first three weekends in August at the Kelly Farm in Bonnie Lake, Washington. If you would like to get one of the free family passes, please call me at my office, 253-582-5604, or you can email me, donna@delphiinternational.com, and in that way, then I will get your name, your address, and that ticket is going to go out to you. So I have, they've been going out quite rapidly, so I have, I think, out of 20 free passes that I have, I think I've got about 10 or 11, something like that. So please get to me. This is coming up in just a few weeks, so I don't want you to miss this wonderful event. Again, the Washington Midsummer Renaissance Fair. I'm going to be there. I'll have a booth. I'll be doing mini readings. I'll have books and I'll have some other things. So won't you join me? I'd love to have you there and love to give you a free family pass, two adults, two children. So call me at my office, 253-582-5604. Well, we've been hearing some commentary in the news regarding Lance Armstrong. This was a short time ago that I can remember him. They were just saying, oh, well, he had taken this, that, or the other. And we might think today that enhancing sports performance is something new. Well, it isn't. And I came across some historical information regarding this, and I just went, whoa, I didn't know that this was something that people would have even considered using. So I'm gonna give you some of this information, and you can check it out if you want. Strychnine. Now, that is a poison. We all know that. However, Thomas Hicks, who was an American runner in the 1904 Olympic marathon, 1904 now, he mixed some with brandy and egg whites. Now, what happened is that he did need emergency medical treatment at the finish line. He nearly died because of this concoction he took. But he won the gold medal. Gee whiz. You think that's a little strange? What about asses' hooves? I'm not using profanity. That's what they were. The hooves of the Abyssinian ass were taken in powder form by ancient Egyptian athletes. What did they do with it? They boiled them in oil, spiked them with rose hips to mask the funky ass hoof flavor. I mean, the Egyptians were doing this stuff. Sugar cubes soaked in ether help cyclists get through a 144-hour race in the 1870s. When that wasn't enough, the coaches added nitroglycerin and cocaine. And that wasn't all they added. They tossed in some peppermint for flavor. You think this is something new? Now, here is something in a million years I would never have imagined that would be performance enhancing. Baking soda. Mm-hmm. There are some swimmers and runners who swear by what they call soda doping. Now, this is what they do. They ingest baking soda to shave precious seconds off their time. Now, this is what happens with the baking soda. It increases your blood pH. They believe it reduces the acid that's produced in muscles, allowing them to keep on moving. It also, by the way, has side effects. Baking soda, if you take too much of it, gives you diarrhea. And that is not a fun thing. And then ultraviolet radiation. Now, this one really is stretching it as far as I'm concerned. However, the Soviets in the 1930s found that if they peppered athletes with UV rays, it improved their speed in the 100-meter dash. German researchers in the 1940s found similar improvements in swimming times after their athletes would spend time under a sun lamp. Makes you wonder what's going on with the body. And then, of course, there's guinea pig sperm. Now, this was in the 1800s. I'm so glad we've gotten past some of this stuff. There's this guy, Charles Brown Sequard. He injected himself with his liquid testicular and later testified that the extract of dog and guinea pig testes made him stronger, and it even lengthened the arc of his urine. Oh, boy. Anyway, it was the predecessor to the hormone-based performance enhancers that they screen for today. Amazing stuff. Pigeon potions? Mm-hmm. Sport of pigeon racing? Doping scandals, big time. Some of the handlers resort to anabolic steroids. Others use drugs that prevent molting to maximize a bird's training season. Birds have also been doped with laxatives to encourage them to drop their payloads before racing, thereby reducing their weight. Amazing stuff. This is sexual stuff. It almost seems like it would come out of a Marvel comic, but it's for real. Truth often is stranger than fiction. My goodness, we are out of time. I want to thank Bill Dean. This is a man I think has had tremendous courage. I'm so grateful that he was able to stay with me for some more time. Smooth Criminal, a one-man American crime wave. Believe me, I think you should get it. Check out our missingnews.com. That's where he posts journalistic information that he feels people should be aware of. This is Donna Siebel. Remember always, you are the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Never give up anything of yours in your mind, your emotions, your spirit to someone else. Clear thinking makes a difference. Take charge of your life and be that example of the best that you are. You'll make a difference. This is Donna Siebel. We'll talk with you tomorrow, right here, same time, same place, and we'll be talking about the Rocky Spirit. Hope you can join me. Donna Siebel here. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.